From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, they're called light beams, so get ready for that. Here's what's happening. It's another terrorist group. It's called the Khorasan Group. The United States says that they have hit them in Syria, but that they were actively plotting against a U.S. homeland target and Western targets. They say the threat was imminent. U.S. Central Command said that the 8 strikes were conducted against the Khorasan targets, including training camps, an explosive factory, and command facilities. Now, as the world reacts with horror to the Islamic State, the United States has raised an alert over these militants specifically targeting the West. As an al-Qaeda fragment after the death of the leader Osama bin Laden, one of the many offshoots in the Middle East has named itself Khorasan. It asserts the sole reason for its existence to attack the United States and Europe. The White House believes them. The U.S. military launched airstrikes in Syria on Tuesday, targeting this group. The Obama administration has said that the Islamic State, the target of more than 160 airstrikes already in recent weeks, does not pose an imminent threat to the U.S. homeland. The Khorasan Group, however, is considered a clear and present danger. In Birmingham, Alabama, a recently fired UPS employee shot to death 2 supervisors at a company facility where he had worked in Birmingham. Then he turned the gun on himself. The gunman, who was wearing a brown UPS uniform, had been fired a day earlier. RFK Jr. wants to jail climate change skeptics. He's an environmental activist, and he says, well, there are no current laws on the books to punish global warming skeptics, and I wish that there were. New figures suggesting 70% of those infected with Ebola in West Africa have died. 70%, higher than previously reported, according to the World Health Organization. Ebola, those infections will jump to 20,000 by November if efforts to tackle the outbreak are not stepped up. In the worst-case scenario, cases in just 2 nations out there could reach 1.4 million in January. Gary Ridenour with us, of course, author of Pandemic, and we've been talking about him since this Ebola outbreak. Gary, it's not getting any better.
No, it's getting worse. And the 1.5 million by January 20th is worst-case scenario, but even if it's 400,000, it's a disaster. The question is that how did this strain of Ebola get 4,000 miles to the other side of Africa? Who put it there, or how did it get there? And with the numbers going to where they're going, the CDC predicts that by summer of next year, there'll be 15 African countries overrun with Ebola.
Jeez. Are you suggesting that this might have been a test tube release?
There are questions about that right now. There's a gentleman in New England Journal of Medicine who worked for a Canadian company. He now works for an American company in viral research, and he is telling everyone on the planet, stop sending Ebola samples around the world to other laboratories in Africa. Somebody may drop one, somebody may steal one, and the situation is not safe at all, and that may be what happened here.
Gary, let's stay in touch. We're going to watch this Ebola situation. Let's keep our fingers crossed that it doesn't happen here. Conservative author, filmmaker, Coast to Coast guest Dinesh D'Souza has been sentenced to spend 8 months in a community confinement center during 5 years of probation after pleading guilty to campaign finance law violations. It could have been worse. Thai Prime Minister has admitted that he sought advice from fortune tellers following media speculation over his spiritual beliefs. Now, he led a May coup that toppled a democratically elected government after months of mass protests that brought much of the capital of Bangkok to a halt. He was named the prime minister last month in an appointment that was condemned by opponents. Barry Manilow has recorded an album of duets with dead people, all of them dead. He's releasing it a few days before Halloween on October 27th. Some of the people he has done his songs with: Jimmy Durante, Mama Cass, Whitney Houston, John Denver, Andy Williams, Dusty Springfield, Sammy Davis Jr., Marilyn Monroe, and Louis Armstrong. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with none other than Dr. Skies, Stephen Cates. Stephen, what do we got this week?
Well, hi, George. Happy equinox, which is about one day old officially, but we mention it because of serious things that go on in the sky. The fall sky, George, for many of the listeners, is one of the most beautiful times of the year to look. And if you're going out to look, don't forget, in about an hour, George, the moon moves on to its new phase. Simply in Earth language, it means this is the best time of the entire month to see if you have clear skies, beautiful events in the sky. We shift quickly to the sun, as we always talk about major activity there. Active region, George, 2172, which is on the left edge of the sun. If people have solar telescopes or solar eclipse glasses, you can actually see the sunspot group, believe it or not, with the naked eye. It's pumped out an M-class flare, but that might even be headed toward the Earth, a small one, but we're still waiting for much more. But George, a sneak preview into October skies, and here's some really cool stuff, and hopefully we can talk about it in October in detail. Don't forget, the next big total lunar eclipse, we've got a second one this year, 2014. Mark the date down, folks, the night of October the 7th into the morning of the 8th. It's favorable for the people in the western part of the United States, but this will be one just like the beautiful one we had, one of the blood moons that we also saw back in April. And then we get another thing going on in October. How about this? A deep partial solar eclipse, which could be dangerous, George. You want to watch that with those protective solar eclipse glasses. That happens on the afternoon of October the 23rd. Visible widely, that is, in the southwest, the northwest of the United States, and some portions of the central part of the United States. So always great things in the sky. Naturally, check us out at drsky.com. And George, our aviation site with great updates at photorecon.net.
You got it. Stevens, thank you so much. Stevens' website, drsky.com. Light beans, what are they? In a moment, Stuart Pierce joins us. We'll talk about that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit about our first couple hour guests. Stuart Pierce, master of voice and angel medium. Stuart Pierce was the head of the voice at the Webber Douglas Academy in London. He helped pioneer the opening of Shakespeare's Globe Theater. What an incredible theater it was. He was back with me about 4 years ago, a little more than 4 years ago, as we talked about some of his work, The Angels of Atlantis book and Oracle, and now The Alchemy of Voice as well. And it's, you're going to hear a couple incredible hours here with Stuart about sound healing and just all kinds of things. Stuart, welcome back.
Hey, hello there, George. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you? What have you been up to?
Where would I begin? At the moment, I'm in New York City, where I've been seeing some very interesting people to do with the development of the project, vis-a-vis the Angels of Atlantis. So it's a wonderful time to be with you.
It sure is. You have that little Roger Moore sound to yourself today.
Well, do I now? Well,
yeah,
thank
you
very much indeed. I suppose it goes partly with the landscape of being a voice coach.
Absolutely. Hey, so the last time we talked, 4 years ago, you created quite an incredible stir as people were talking about your work about angels, Atlantis, alchemy. And how did you get interested in this in the first place?
Well, the Alchemy of Voice, which was the book that we spoke of 4 years ago, whatever it was, that was inspired by meeting a group of angels, 12 angels in particular, during the Great Harmonic Convergence of 1987. Now, the interesting thing is that when the book, The Alchemy of Voice, which is about using sound as a healing modality, particularly our voices, when that came out, the angels were still very reticent about revealing the totality of the work that they wished to bring forth. And that was largely as a result of the people that I was working with, because as well as working with very famous actors, I was also being drawn into working with the great and the good. And, you know, back then, we're talking about 5 years ago, lots happened since December the 21st, 2012, and the varying precipitative events that led up to that, that they wanted me to remain silent so that my profile still could be intact. Well, I've now come out of the closet, and I'm speaking about angels, so that automatically there are certain areas of society that probably would not find my advantages to be specifically advantageous. You know, you don't go into Downing Street talking about I see angels.
They simply don't respond
very well. But as a result of the enormous changes that are taking place, as I believe we move through the central core, this tipping point of a spiritual revolution at this time, they've asked me to come forward with a series of products which have been extraordinarily successful in the sense that they brought people a new sense of hope, a new sense of the fact that we have potential within us rather than devolutionary capacity. And as a result of that, our peoples and our society and our great planet is moving forward with the potential that it is in terms of the way that some of the great civilizations are denoting. And I'm thinking specifically about what the Mayan and the Aztec and the Kogi are saying. So that's one of the principal reasons, or a few of the reasons, for why I step forward with this remarkable work.
When you talk about Angels of Atlantis, Stuart, exactly what is that?
Well, as I just referred to this extraordinary experience that I had, so maybe if I tell the story of how I met them, that would bring light to the nature of your question.
Mm-hmm.
During the early 80s, I was beginning to establish my work as a voice coach, and having been, prior to that, an actor. The reason why I made an organic change from being an actor to a voice coach was simply because much of the work as an actor was drawing me to the great United States of America, and particularly to Hollywood. And at that time, a huge change took place in my family's personal circumstance, in the sense that my mother was diagnosed with having cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And so I shifted organically, and when we do these things, the wheel of fortune turns with a clunk. And many things started to happen, specifically to do with the nature of the way that I suddenly moved into voice coaching. And there I was also working with people like Margaret Thatcher and so forth and so forth. And so we see when doors open like this, and they're very large doors, that we see that the divine has some form of providential impact on our lives. So I moved through it. In short, what happened is that I gained major opportunities through some very remarkable people whom I worked with as an actor, one of them being Cicely Berry, who was the voice director of the Moira Shakespeare Company. And that's how I began to work within British drama schools in the way that you were just talking about it, you know, the Webber Douglas Academy, where I was head of voice for about 17 or 18 years. However, as soon as we start working with the voice, we work with the inner being of the individual. And as I did this, my intuition began to switch back on, as it were, because I was certainly extremely alive to the possibility of the preternatural and the supernatural world as a child, meaning that I saw the multidimensional universe as a child. But then, because of the fact that other people did not appreciate what I was seeing, I closed down. Particularly, I thought everybody saw angels, I thought everybody saw fairies and spirit, I thought everybody saw aura, but I soon found out this was not so. So I closed down. However, when I started working as a voice coach, all of that extraordinarily inchoate substance of the preternatural and the intuitive began to open out for me. So I trained as an intuitive in a professional sense in the United Kingdom, and as we lead forward to the great date of August 15, 16, 17, 1987, a friend had a crystal store in the town of Glastonbury in Somersetshire, which is a very powerful earth energy center. In fact, it's known as being the heart chakra of the world.
Oh.
And there I was working with so many of the people that had come for this very extraordinary festival, the Harmonic Convergence. And during a break, I began to feel specifically, you know, very affected by the energies. It was a very, very fizzy, vortex-like energies moving through that wonderful, wonderful town, which, if anybody's ever visited it, they will recognize there's something extraordinarily special about the Tor, this hill, which is also considered to be the ancient island of Avalon. So there are many stories about King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table, etc., etc. So there I was moving to the Tor because I knew that that was a principal site of energy for me. I'd been many times to this extraordinary little town in Somersetshire in the United Kingdom. And as I sat on the Tor and meditated, just as all my teachers had taught me, whenever I felt a shift of energy, as I meditated, I heard a series of extraordinary harmonics, preternatural, otherworldly sounds that really startled me. So I opened my eyes, and in front of me were 12 large orbs, very, very large orbs of different colors. And I heard within my consciousness, we are the angels of Atlantis, and we bring you a body of work that you will develop, which is a temple of sound healing that you will call the Alchemy of Voice. I turned to the person sitting next to me, because I thought I was delusional, and said, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And he said, oh, yeah, oh, absolutely. But I realized that he was actually, he was not fully responsible. He was involved in...
He probably saw nothing.
Well, he was high.
Ah, that
he
explains...
He was involved in intoxicating devices. So he didn't see. But I listened to this extraordinary expression from the divine, and these immense orbs of light, I began to realize were some of the great orb wanderers of the universe. Now, orbs to me were not unusual. What was unusual was being given a body of work, which they then proceeded to do over a period of time, not all that day, over about 7 years, and I started to tabulate what that work was all about for future promise. And look what we're doing. Here we are in the middle of a conversation about these extraordinary beings.
These beings, are they, would you consider them to be, well, I guess you would, well-intentioned, out to help us, as opposed to trickery or trying to do something demonic?
Yes, I haven't discovered any darkness at all in their action or indeed in their intention. These are beings that we know rather well. I mean, there is Gabriel, there is Michael, there is Uriel, there is Raphael, there is Haniel. And then there are angels that are not so well known, angels such as Jophiel and Sandalphon and Haniel and Raziel. They each have an attribution. They each fulfill an archetypal role. They come together as a consort or as a summit conference of 12, because they, by that equation, they awaken the ring pass knot that we associate with the universal resonance frequency. So what I mean by this is that we know that we are waking from the order of seven, the seven vibration, which is the resonance frequency of our planet. So we have 7 days in the week, the seven deadly sins, the seven dwarves, the seven notes in the octave, the seven deadly sins, I think I've already said, the seven mm-hmm. major words of Christ, you know, the seven major orifices in the body, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're now maturing, and we know that we don't just simply have seven chakra, we have 12 chakra, and those 12 chakra are beginning to open, particularly the eighth, which is the universal heart chakra. And so we move into the vibration of, I'm moving quite speedily here as we evolve, into the position of what 12 can offer us as a major coda or key within our lives as universal beings. And so it feels to me, through some of the remarkable activities that are taking place on our planet, that we're all beginning to look upwards for a change. Now, our ancestors constantly did, because they were aware of the stars as they steered their way through the countryside or indeed on the oceans. But we're looking up and we're realizing, wait a minute, is there life out there? And so, as we know, there are very extraordinary things taking place, such as the Disclosure Committee and the sudden awareness of angelology. If you go into Barnes & Noble, you see angels, angels
they're
all over the place.
Yeah, they're all over the place. Now, what's the significance of the number 12 in relation to them?
So, as I was just talking, that we refer to 12 as being the universal resonance frequency, so we're waking up to the fact that we're not planetary beings, we're universal beings, we're galactic beings, we're cosmic beings. And therefore, the angels provide us with a lot of information which is not too dissimilar to other major sources about the nature of the fact that this planet is a very rare biosphere in the life of the galaxy. Indeed, they refer to it as being the only planet of choice, that this vibrational frequency that we're living is a dualistic frequency.
Hold on for a second, Stuart. We're going to hit this break, but we're going to come right back. And welcome back to Coast, Stuart Pearce with us as we talk about angels that are affecting this planet as we speak. How close are these angels, Stuart, to what we would call the divine?
Immensely close, George, because the angels are literally thoughts of God. They're direct emanations of the Halua Kodesh. They're direct creations of the Divine One. And we know this because of the vast library of thought that's been recorded as literature over the years about the way that the early mystics referred to. Unfortunately, we have none of the books, or at least it appears that we have none of the books that were from former civilizations, because they were all in Alexander's library. And Alexander's library, as we know, is one of the wonders of the world, was actually burned down.
That's
and
right.
So many of the great books of Atlantis and Lemuria were, you know, met their decease, so to speak, their demise. But yeah, wherever we go, through St. John of the Divine, through Hildegard von Bingen, through Dionysus, the Areopagite, rather, we hear that angels were literally emanations of God that were, as it were, radiating one specific frequency, which is to love for the sake of love.
What are they attempting to teach us, Stuart? They definitely want to give us a message. They want us to learn. They want us to do something. What is that?
That we're not alone. Very, very simply, that we are not alone. That love is all there is. Their vibration is to love for the sake of love, not to love so that we can actually be loved back.
They've got their job cut out for them.
Very singularly. Yeah, very singularly at this time, because as we look at our lives are hurly-burly, our lives are in chaos, whether this be personally or planetary. There is something huge going on in this planet, and much of what's going on, as we know, is conflict and dissipation and despair. And so they come to say, okay, you have been through a revolution of consciousness. It started at the end of the 19th century with the development of the unique autonomy of the individual as a result of industrialization, commercialization, and capitalization. So we moved into a position where we began unplugging from the patriarchy and became immensely successful. I tumble forward into the two great wars, the two great world wars, and then into the beginning of the 20th century, where we began to become much more interested in our psyche and our consciousness as a result of the development of Sigmund Freud's work, Carl Jung's work, and all the other immensely effective contributing people to the field of psychotherapy or psychoanalysis or indeed psychology. And we tumble forward to the 60s. And the great thought corridors opening between East and West. We tumble forward to the point where we're becoming more independent. We're learning about co-creativity rather than codependency. And yet, all the time, as we face all of these vast changes that we're living, 2008 was one of them that we can look at in the sense of the fact that our money markets were threatened with eventual demise. It seems that they've somehow righted themselves. Maybe that's to do with the fact that thought creates reality and that the angels have been helping us all the time to move towards this statement that we are not alone.
Can they change things on this planet, or do we have to do it?
Well, I believe that the answer is yes and no. Yes, they can, in the sense of the fact that divine countenance can automatically precipitate change for advantageous means through the nature of the multiplicitousness of consciousness on our planet, which is predominantly humanoid, but of course we have the great plant kingdoms and the great animal kingdoms that are not humanoid. So that, yes, they can bring about change, but their consciousness, I believe, is literally oriented towards one thing, which is to love for the sake of love. And so they will only move when we ask them to. That's the extraordinary thing. They will only engage when we ask them to, although we know, many of us, you know, I think it's 85% of the population of the United States of America believes in angelic countenance, believes
they do.
Angels
That's
exist.
True. That's true.
And, you know, and you and I, I'm sure, could share many stories that you've heard from people, and maybe that you've heard, that you've experienced yourself. I know I have many stories where the angels literally take on human form, but then disappear immediately in situations when human beings are violently affected, whether it be to do with ill health or to do with injury or to do with desperation, that something miraculous takes place.
No.
And I believe that that's why the angels are with us. You know, they're here to remind us of the magic and the miracles of our life as we face the dross and the diversity and the devolution that we look at.
Somewhere there are fallen angels who don't want us to succeed, who don't want us to better ourselves, who don't want peace and harmony on this planet. When do we encounter them, Stuart?
Well, I believe that fallen angels as a concept is an erroneous one. I believe it's something that we were fed by patriarchal thought that emerges out of the great Old Testament, and specifically in relation to God's appointed one, namely Lucifer, and how he was cast out of heaven. I believe that that is not what God does. I believe that that was a story that was created by the Old Testament patriarchs to effectively move the community into feeling a quality of fear, which is not what angels bring, about the nature of the divine. I believe that God is all love and that we are the beings that perpetrate the fear. All the teachings that I refer to from these 12 great archangels, the angels of Atlantis, not once have they given me any impression that there are fallen angels. But of course, there is a body of thought which you're referring to within the Old Testament and other considerable writings that say there are. I personally don't subscribe to that.
Well, though, you're not alone with that either, because there are many out there who do not believe in the biblical context of angels and what they may be. So you're not standing out there alone.
Oh, indeed. You know, one of the things that happened when I started working very closely with these particular angels that are known as the Malachim. The Malachim were the beings of light that surrounded the Melchizedek. And the Melchizedek were the priest kings or the patriarchs that formulated the so-called beginning of creation, as far as we have records of, which was the beginning of the Jewish state. And these beings of light, of course, were segregated by the major priests or the Sanhedrin or the Kabbalists into very specific categories, which are recorded within the Bible. You know, I mean, it's quite extraordinary that when I started to really research, we have the first sphere, the heavenly counselors, the seraphim, the cherubim, and the thrones, and then the second sphere with the heavenly governors, the dominions, the virtues, and the powers, and then the third sphere, the heavenly messengers, the principalities, the archangels, and the angels themselves. And, you know, when I read this, reread it, because when the angels started working with me comprehensively, they said, "What do you know about angels?" And of course, it wasn't a demand, but it was a statement that evoked something within my consciousness, which is that all the information that I had was received, and some of it was highly inaccurate, such as, well, let's get hold of the whole angelic communion and start to hierarchically divide. This was something that was very much a mechanism of the patriarchal thought. And now what we're seeing today is that we're moving into unilateral aspects of management where people have specific roles, but there is a shared co-creative responsibility. And therefore we move away from the absurd structure of the pyramid patriarchal leadership process. You know, the king is at the top, or Jupiter is at the top, or Saturn is at the top, or Big Daddy is at the top, and then metering down through the varying aspects of what social class is all about. This is an absurdity in our civilizations today. So, again, where there is this note about, are there fallen angels? I don't believe that there are. I believe that there is darkness in our world.
No question. We see it every day.
Indeed. I mean, all we have to do is look towards the Gaza Strip to see what's going on, and other areas of Syria and so forth, other areas of the planet such as Syria, and indeed in our own backyard when we hear about the perpetrations of great evil in relation to our fellow human beings. Yeah, but I don't believe that's angelic. I believe that's to do with the perpetration of human beings.
It's got to be frustrating, though, for the angelic realm to see all this hatred, to see all that's going on this planet, and it's just not stopping.
Well, if we say that the angelic realm is frustrated, what we're doing is assuming that angels are human beings, because it's human beings who become frustrated. Mm-hmm. I believe that we're dealing with a high frequency force of extraordinary beings that are literally suffused with the totality of the feeling, of the purpose, of the vibration, of the frequency, of the essence of what love is. Love does not criticize. Love is unconditional. It does not say, I am suffering. It just is.
You have talked about angelic sound healing. Explain that a little bit more for us, Stuart.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? The story of how I met the angels, which I recounted just now, I was met not just simply by the visual of these orbs, but initially by these extraordinary sounds, harmonic resonances. And they awoke me to the fact that sound is at the very core of creation. Well, we know this within our cultures, because we speak of, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh, or, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. You know, we could go through every single world culture, and there is some form of significance in relation to the use of sound at creation. On this great, great continent, it's believed that in the Native American peoples, particularly the Hopi, that the great spider woman sang, and when she sang, she brought into creation. So when we look at angels in the Renaissance period, when they were painted as human beings with wings, which is another interesting phenomenon, isn't it? We're beginning to see through orb photography and many angelic counters that that angels are actually great orbs of light. And indeed, just on that segue, I've read some of the great Christian mystics and some of the great Sufi mystics, going back to Hildegard von Bingen, St. John of the Divine, and they all said that angels are orbs of light. Isn't that fascinating? There they were writing hundreds of years ago. So there is something within the manifestation of the fact that angels use sound as a currency. So in the great stained glass windows of our medieval cathedrals, we see angels with trumpets, we see angels with their mouths open, and we refer to the Hallelujah chorus sung by angels. In the Bible, of course, we know that the angels came and sang a chorus to the shepherds that gave them prophecy of the fact that they needed to move and tend to the baby Jesus, etc., etc., etc.
There's something to the sound, to the resonance, I think. I don't know what it does, but there's...
In what way, George?
Well, it's just that the vibration, there's just something to the sound, I guess, that makes it do some incredible things.
Yes, I believe that we're just beginning to discover the power of sound. We're seeing it through ultrasound. We're seeing it being used by some of our armed forces on this planet, sending vibration, sound vibration through the great oceans to move molecular structure within the density of water. We know that those sound mechanisms are also affecting the oceanographic life in the form of the fact that, you know, whales and dolphins beach themselves, or indeed breach themselves, and that their ears are bleeding profusely with the high-level sonar that they're receiving. There is a very, very strong contention that the whole of ancient Atlantis was brought to its knees, as it were, certainly sent to the ocean floor, by the use of sound. And you and I have great interest in the ancient civilizations such as Egypt. We look into, well, how were those pyramids actually built? And there is a possible theory that sound was used, because sound can rearrange molecular structure to such a degree that heavy substances become much lighter.
They almost like floated the blocks, I think, into place.
Yeah, I'm completely with you, George. I saw this many years ago in Tibet, when I visited Tibet, because of the use of sound in Tibetan Buddhism, the great chanting mechanisms of the Gyalto, and I saw five Tibetan monks chant way up in the mountains above Lhasa, and moving a granite boulder the size of, oh gosh, you know, like the globe that Atlas would have carried, moving it purely through sound.
Have you seen stories, Stuart, of huge rocks in the desert that have moved and they have no idea what's going on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're extraordinary manifestations of unusual supernatural activity. Now, have they been moved by extraterrestrials? Have they been moved by angelic order? Have they been moved by, well, the speculations go on and on and on. There is a wonderful video of the way the crop circles are manifest. I don't know if you've seen it, George, where two golden orbs create
right above it. That's right.
A crop circle. You know, so we know that it has been proven through those dedicated to crop circleology that the nature of the constitution of the crop, whether it be, you know, barley or oats or you know, just simple grasses such as rape, that the constitution of the plant has been changed in such a way that it's been affected by ultrasonic sound. So here we are beginning to see that sound is a much more powerful energy than we first thought of. We know this simply in relation to the human voice, because we can all think things and not be moved, but as soon as we come to speak them, we weep. A problem shared is a problem halved, we say. We know that our lives are changed from disharmony into harmony when we listen to beautiful sounds that are coherent with the vibration, not of the disease within our bodies, but within the desire to release the disease. I mean, the information goes on and on and on about what sound healing has implication for. And so I believe that the angels come from the very core of creation to bring us sound as a device that has rich and vast potential. I've just recorded, just come out of the recording studio, not literally, but just over the last few days, having recorded very special inspirational sounds that the angels have given me just by using their names in chant form and arranging them in certain frequency patterns with music or indeed with natural sound dedicated to the essence of each angel, because each angel has a job and therefore has an essence on this level of vibration. And when I play these extraordinary chants, people move through huge activities where they say, my goodness me, I've always felt that I wanted to be with angels, and now I feel that the angels are here because of these extraordinary chants. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And each chant is different?
Each chant is different. Each chant is the essence of the quality or the personality, if you will, of each of the angels. Yeah.
Stuart's websites, of course, are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We've talked about his work, The Alchemy of Voice, also now The Angels of Atlantis, the book, The Oracle. What main message do they want us to take? Is there one single message here?
That very simply that we are not alone. That when we human beings meet dire circumstances in our lives, times of great challenge, periods of woe or despair, we feel ourselves to be crumblingly alone.
Yes. No,
and their great message is that we are not alone, that we are all one. If we insert another L into the word alone, which is clever semantics maybe, we see we are all one. And therefore their love is unbridled, their love is unconditional, their love is a force that moves the molecular energy of our beings to an extent where our lives simply change. And life is never the same again. It's always moving forward through overcoming of disease or overcoming of terrible controversy or challenge. They are there. Now, you know, early civilizations, the Romans and the Greeks believed in angels. The Romans called the guardian angel, which we each have, appointed to us as soon as we make fusion and soul comes forth into incarnation. I mean that moment when sperm and ovum fuse and there is intention that life will be brought forth. An angel comes and serves us from that moment all the way through to our passing, when we go back into the heavenly spheres, as it were.
Well, I've always believed, Stuart, that the angels are out there to help us, and you're a living testimony that they are. Thank you so much. Up next, we're going to talk about space warps. That's right, on Coast to Coast AM.